All right, so it's been quite a week. Just thinking back to this time last week, there was a lot of anticipation and energy about what was going to happen with the election. And it was very close, and there's decisive, but there's still a lot of unknown questions. What's going to happen? And as you reflect back on this week, from a Dharmic perspective, the question is, what sense of self was being born in those different times, those different experiences, when you felt that sense of anticipation, that worry, the sense of despair, the excitement? No matter what side you might have been on, you probably went through these different states. And usually we get so focused on those states and the content that we forget to step back and actually reflect that this is a mind state. This is just a mind state that's arising. And to even step back further, to see that this is a sense of self that is arising. This is a sense of birth, to use the language of dependent origination, that I've shaped into, that I've grown, I've allowed, this process has taken hold, and this sense of self is alive and well. And this sense of self defines and shapes the whole world and how I relate to it. So we've been exploring this dependent origination this whole month, this whole year, I should say. And all the stuff we've explored so far can go in a snap of a finger. Just that whole cycle from that predispositions of how we view the world, that how which things we pay attention to that Vedana, to the craving, clinging, becoming, and the now selfing. And so how do we work with it? And how do we look at this? Because we're always going to be cycling through these senses of self. This is really our main human experience. This is the human experience that gives us great delight and joy, and also great sorrow and despair, when it grips us in the painful births. And each one of these births over this last week, and even today, even during this sit, each one of those tends to recondition us into more ignorance, into more suffering. The suffering that is born from it sets us up to this blindness, which then predisposes us. It's almost like it sets the seeds for the next cycle to arise. But this is not required. I mean, we can actually learn to meet this very birth, this very moment, in such a way that starts to loosen this momentum that creates a sense of me again and again. Now, from a kind of our Western culture perspective, the sense of birth often seems like it's a good thing. We love to have these new experiences, these new relationships, these new hobbies, whatever it is. We love that sense of becoming, really getting engaged, because it does feel good. It feels really engaging. And the same process is what gives us those times of deep anxiety, deep worry, deep depression. These are also mind states. It's the same process that we can't control, can't guarantee which cycle will happen. And so from a Buddhist perspective, this taking birth is not considered a good thing. It's considered the part of the cycle of suffering. And so I'd like to explore this a little bit. I think a big thing that helps us make sense of it is the examination of the relative versus absolute realities. So as we look at those, at the absolute and relative realities, it's often helpful to look at preferences. That we as humans, we have preferences. There's things that we like I might like chocolate ice cream versus vanilla ice cream. Not just simply how I'm wired. There's a preference to who becomes the next president of the United States. There's this preference that we have. We naturally prefer to go one way or another. We prefer not to have illness or sickness in our bodies or in our loved ones. We prefer to be free of pain. Of course we do. And this acknowledgement, when we acknowledge that, okay, I'm preferring this, I'm wanting this, this helps us to unhook from the cycle of Vedana, craving, clinging, becoming. It starts to loosen that up. But if we don't see that we're having a preference, it's not seen as a preference and something we're adding to the moment, then we're off to the races. We're off to clinging and craving and to becoming. And of course, this all revolves around the content, the situations, the circumstances of our lives. You know, how we body, our body is in this moment, in this period of time. Are we healthy? Are we ill? Are we struggling with chronic pain? Are we full of vitality and health? In our mental state of health? The circumstances of our lives. Do we have enough money, enough food, enough shelter? You know, all these qualities certainly are very relatively important. And yet the content from a Buddhist perspective, from a Dharmic perspective, from a deep Dharmic perspective, the content doesn't matter. The content doesn't matter. It matters completely from the relative reality. You know, it completely matters. But from the absolute perspective, it doesn't matter. And so this is often a struggle that we have in our minds, in our practices. And how do I reconcile, you know, the relative needs, the relative reality, its strategies with the absolute? How do we bring that forth? Because the relative and absolute are available in every moment. You know, it's just a simple releasing of the very way we see the world. That's not quite the right way to say it, because it's not just releasing the way we see the world, like I decide to look at it this way versus that way. I'm really releasing the very thing, the very entity, the sense of what observes that is changed from this limited sense of me observing, me experiencing, me wanting, me not wanting, to something that is so much vaster, so much broader. It's like tapping into that stillness that just resonates and permeates all things. So it just can be just a moment shift to something that really falls away and something that emerges from that. And of course, you can shift back into the relative with a contraction, with a, it doesn't even have to be a contraction. Contraction sometimes, you know, it feels like a contraction sometimes, but sometimes it just feels like, oh, I'm really engaged with this. I'm really excited about it. So does this mean as human beings who practice the Dharma, we can't get excited, we can't have joy? No. What it means, though, is we learn how to have the absolute hold the relative. And when this starts to happen, there's this beautiful way of the relative is seen and experienced and felt with this, with very little friction or no friction. So it arises, it's met, whether it's a painful moment of reality or a delightful, beautiful moment. It's actually both felt very deeply, very intimately, without a sense of separation, without a sense of distance. It's met, it allows to be seen and felt, and it moves through. And in that meeting, there's this wisdom of how to act with it, how to act in relationship to it, with compassion, with wisdom. See, the absolute, you know, it doesn't matter what's arising. That sense of preference is also known. From the relative reality, the preference is what matters and the content. So one way to maybe explore this is to consider it as a riddle, as a sense of a, like almost a Zen riddle or a Dharmic riddle. And then in a Zen koan, in that tradition, and we can also use that in our tradition, is when something's posed, a question's posed, an expression of the absolute reality, that it just seems very, you just don't understand it. It seems so obtuse or just seems so paradoxical. That's often a cue that there's this paradoxical way where in the relative observes the absolute, it seems very like a paradox. It doesn't make any sense. So the question is, how can we see what perspective, how can I experience the perspective that that made sense, that statement made sense? From what perspective, from what state of being really, does it not matter what is present? So Let's take that, doesn't matter what is present in this moment from an absolute perspective. All that matters is how do we relate to it? Do we relate to it in a way that creates a self, that creates suffering, that creates dukkha? Or do we relate in a way that leads to freedom? That's the essential question. And each single moment presents us with that question. Often we're not paying attention. We're so caught up in it, we don't even notice that choice. And that's this power of the Sankhara, is it just keep building and building. When we start to bring our attention, we really bring our sincerity, our intentionality to our lives through the gateway of our practice, we start to see those choices. I know many, if not all of us, have felt that through our practice, that we feel that urge to lash out, to say something unkind, to write that email, to send that text. And we pause for a moment. And in that pause, we feel what our experience is. We meet it without resistance. And we see that the action, suddenly there's different actions that are available. We actually can maybe lead from our hearts. This is unhooking that conditionality. So this riddle, from what perspective, from what state of being does it not matter what is present? Okay, does it matter? This really goes into that rub. It doesn't matter who is elected president. It doesn't matter if we live for another 50 years or another hour. It doesn't matter if it rains or if it's sunny, if our bodies are pain-free or racked with pain. From the absolute perspective, there's a way that we can see it that it doesn't matter. So please don't discount the relative reality. That's, of course, it's almost a different strategy that we can shift into. But it's also a strategy that we're well practiced at. We know how to do the relative strategy of problem solving, of arguing, of ranting and complaining and hoping and desiring and all of this quality. It's very practiced. So we have to bring that energy to see the absolute start to reveal itself, to actually show how it's there right in this moment. So from what perspective, what state of being does it not matter what is present? Now, this isn't an adopted stance. It's not this kind of retreating into this idea of let's say, equanimity, that I'm kind of closed off to everything, so I don't feel it. Right? It doesn't matter what's here if I'm not feeling it. That's a distortion of the practice. It's a stance that it's really a change of being that it truly doesn't matter. And you can double check how the heart is. Is the heart open and fully available to whatever is arising? Is it fully available to the pain of this moment, the sorrow? Is it fully available to the joy and the delight? And does it really not waver, does not change based on what's here? Right? So the riddle is where, what has to change? What has to release in me for that state of being to arise, to really be revealed, is a better way to say it. Because it's really our natural state. We've covered up and obscured. What's the shift that's simply present? All we have to do is simply know what is here without a movement toward or a movement away from this moment. So there's a sense of being like the tree that's just simply standing there in the midst of the breeze moving through its leaves. It fully receives it and fully releases it in the moment. And the secret really is to not take it personally, meaning not to create and reinforce this sense of self, this sense of me. To affirm that this is the sense of me or I having this experience. This is really the whole point of dependent origination, is to learn how to meet this moment without having to engage in the sense of self, both with its pleasures and its pains, to actually discover and reveal a deeper sense of joy, a deeper sense of peace, that's independent of the circumstances. the situation of our lives. This is truly what's meant by practicing with conditions as they are. Practicing with the conditions how they are. Conditions of walking outside with a mask on, the conditions of having to sanitize your hands, the conditions of the disruptions in the world. All these things are the conditions. How do we meet this? How do we open to this? Just how it is, without adding or taking anything away. This is what's embedded in instructions. I love to see how the basic instruction of just meet the breath, meet this emotion, meet this mind state without adding anything to it, starts to point us toward this absolute. It points us to the reality, this state of being that holds all things equal, without equally near to all things. And once we start to get a taste of that, we start to have this kind of opening into this sense of absolute, then the work is to start to bring the relative and absolute back into balance. So we pick up the relative when it's needed, when we have to solve a problem at work, when we have to meet a person that we've harmed, and really listen deeply, acknowledge what we've done, and make amends. When we problem solve how to have the things we value manifest in the world, how do we work with the current situation, whatever it might be. This is why often, like in the Zen description of awakening, the person awakens, and then the next phase is to go back into the village to pick back up their load and re-engage. But the relative's always held in this beautiful perspective of the absolute. This is the riddle of our practice. This is the riddle of dependent origination. So every moment, a sense of self arises, and we have the choice, how do I meet that? Do I meet it in a way that creates and perpetuates my suffering, that perpetuates, reinforces that sense of self? Or do I meet it in a different way? A way of the stillness itself meeting it. And the practice starts to, that dependent origination starts to loosen its drive. And something happens. Something awakens in us. I love the poem by Rumi that speaks so well to this, and I'll close with this. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. All right, if we could just sit quietly for a few moments. Thank you for your attention. And so right now we have a chance to explore this topic in a small group format. I know sometimes people really enjoy those small groups and long for them, and other people are maybe a little shy around it. So, you know, whatever is appropriate for you is perfectly fine. If you like to not participate, you're welcome just to stay back here in the main group. Ignore the invitation to go into the small group. And then in 20 minutes, we'll come back for some questions and answers. But if you'd like to join, do a small group, just stick around. You get an invitation to join those groups, and then you can dialogue. So just to talk a little bit about what those you can discuss to bring that sense of that question in. So this is really focusing on the homework from last week. And notice, reflect with your partners, or do groups of maybe 3 to 4 people, or maybe 4 to 5. What states of mind did you experience this week? Okay, so think back over this whole week, you know, particularly around the election. It can be a nice place to land or practice. What states of mind did you experience this week? You know, the joys, the excitement, the anticipation, the fears, the worries, the despair, you know, whatever it might be, and how it throughout the week perhaps different mind states arose. As best you can, stay focused on the states of mind, the emotions, versus the content. Because it's easy to get caught in the content and go right into that. And the content has its place, but that place isn't right now. And then as you talk about those states, notice how those states reflected the sense of you in the moment, how they reflected who you took yourself to be, your sense of identity, what you valued, what you thought was right, the actions that would flow from that. Those are all ways of kind of showing this sense of self. And as you observe it this way, if you're able to do that, is there any softening or release of that sense of self, both in this past week and perhaps even as you discussed? You know, that's one of the values of these groups, is that this actual discussing can start to transform you as you start to actually own your experience. So I'll put those 3 questions in the chat there. It seems to kind of truncate everything, so it looks a little funny, but hopefully you can navigate that. Okay, so I assume we'll put you in breakout rooms. If you'd like to, you're welcome just to unmute yourself, and we can go from there.
Hi, Tim.
Can you hear me? Yes.
Okay. So our group was talking about the absolute and the relative.
Yes.
And so when you say relative, is that more the selfing and the absolute being more, well, the opposite, the selfless, the
yes.
awakening or,
Yes, yeah, exactly. So the relative reality inherently has a sense of self in it. Like it has to, it's that's what's operating in it. And it's only when that makes sense from the relative reality is that sense of self. While the absolute reality sees through this illusion of I, me, and mine into this sense of unity, this sense of interconnection. Now it's interesting how the absolute can hold the relative. So it can still hold the relative detail, but it, from the absolute perspective, the sense of self can kind of arise and pass away. But it's not believed in the same way. When we're just operating from the relative reality, you know, the really caught up in that, there's no sense of perspective. It's like the sense of let's say ignorance or delusion kind of comes over us, and we're fully believing in that role. We're fully believing in that sense of who we are. You know, when we, you know, think about the last time you were really upset about something. You know, you're really convinced that you're right and the other person was wrong. You know, it's like that. In that case, the illusion, the delusion and the ignorance is taken to the forefront. So there's no sense of perspective. There's no sense of, oh, I'm having this mind state and I'm having this sense of self that's birthed into this mind state. Well, other times, you know, you could be, you know, maybe stepping into a role, you know, as a mother or as a spouse, and you know you step into that role, but it's kind of relative to those conditions. It's not something that you're so invested in. You're able to set that aside in a different role. You know? And so it's kind of that the absolute perspective gives us the fluidity to move in and out of those roles, to move fluidly in and out of the relative. I think it actually allows us to be much more skillful and compassionate with our actions in the relative world. Well, if we're just caught in the relative, there's no perspective of the absolute, we tend to be caught in reactivity. We tend to always refer back to me and what I want, what I don't want. We've projected outward about that person. And so there's this way that it has this, it's really a quality of delusions. And differentiation beautifully describes this. Oh. Right. Does that help or anything else?
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. All right. Anyone else have anything they'd like to share?
Pam, I have a question.
Yes, Leslie.
I'm not sure quite how I can say this, but I hope it will make sense. It's I have this what I'm visualizing is the two worlds, worlds of consciousness, the relative world and an absolute world of consciousness. And in the relative world, in this little cartoon I've got going in my head, there are all these pleasures and treats and pitfalls and emotions and, you know, I don't know, chocolate bars and I don't know, just all the stuff that there is.
Yes.
That can suck me into identifying. And therein lies the problem.
Yes.
And then, but I'm wondering, in the absolute world of absolute consciousness, are there also pitfalls there?
Hmm.
I mean, can you become wishy-washy? Or I mean, I don't even know how to talk about that question, but it's a question. Does it make sense at all?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you.
Just to kind of paraphrase to make sure I captured that, the essence of your question well. So the relative world, you can kind of get a sense of that. I like that kind of cartoon image of there's all the treats. There's also all the thorns, and we're kind of navigating that world. But is there, we can see the pitfall is inherent in the relative world, because there's going to be winners, there's going to be losers. There's the whole eight worldly winds of, praise and blame, fame and disrepute, all those qualities. But in the absolute, is there also the pitfalls? Is there also that same thing? And this is a really interesting question, because sometimes the absolute is masquerading, it's really the relative is masquerading as the absolute. Okay, so like let's say I read about the absolute and I say, okay, that's a good, I like that. I'm going to adopt it as a philosophy. I'm going to take it on as a stance, a way of relating to the world, relating to life in that way. But I'm really imposing it upon the world, imposing it upon me, instead of actually really seeing it as a direct, immediate experience. So in that way, what I'm imposing, that's actually can be quite problemsome, can actually be even dangerous. Because in that philosophy of the absolute, when it doesn't matter, if there's pleasure or pain or gain or loss, then my actions suddenly don't matter. Again, this is the relative trying to convince itself of the absolute. Okay, so then there's that can have the trouble of misconduct that we often see in spiritual teachers, that they have realizations and understandings, and they're really grounded in the absolute, but they're not fully in it. And they're actually invested so much in the absolute, they don't see the relative influence that's there, the relative reality. And so then, sexual misconduct, abusing power, stealing money, all these things, it's like, well, it doesn't matter. It's everything, the absolute perspective, yes, it doesn't matter. But the relative is trying to be the absolute. So that way can actually be quite dangerous. There can also be the, in a more, I don't know if it's so much benign, but I don't want to how to qualify it. But if we kind of get into the absolute, what moves us in life becomes less clear initially. Because usually what motivates us and asks us to do things and have our plans and our goals is really based in the relative, right? So I want to go to this kind of training. I want to go to get this job or this degree or this partner or this house or whatever it might be. There's that sense of the relative influencing the world, engaging in the world. Now, when you see through that, when you have this glimpse of the absolute, that's enough to really throw everything into question. When the relative no longer has its conviction, because you've seen the absolute clearly enough that you can see that the relative reality is just really this, it's happenstance. It arises and it passes away. So there's this way it kind of undercuts all that motivation, all the stuff that's moved us through life. And then we're like, well, how do I act in the world? How do I actually be in the world? And that's perhaps what you meant by that wishy-washiness. Or maybe that, actually we'll come back to that in a little bit different way. But that sense of that what moves us in our life, it's really almost for many people, it's a transition period where they're not quite sure what motivates them in their life. Their old desires or old passions seem to feel empty. And yet, over time, something else starts to emerge, that absolute starts to move through us in a way that there is a new way of infusing our actions, a way that motivates, that moves us from that, the essence of the heart, the essence of the stillness moves us in life. And you can be doing the exact same action from a relative perspective, a relative motivation, or the same action being done from the absolute. So that's one aspect. And then I think the wishy-washiness, to speak to that for a second, since you mentioned that. Again, when we're decisive about something, we're often really in the relative. You know, there's a sense of, I know this is good, this is wrong, this is right. And there's that kind of decisiveness that can sometimes happen. Start to see the absolute, it becomes like, well, yeah, does it really matter? Or does it matter, you know, in the same way that it did? So similar in the other way, that there's this transition as our normal way of ordering the world and making choices in the world. That strategy starts to fall away. And then it takes some time for that different way of seeing the world to come up. And then it's much more of a sense of deep resonance than when you see an action, like, okay, I choose choice A and choice B. I can feel choice A has a little bit of agitation, a little bit of noise, a little bit of contraction of heart. And I can see, well, yeah, actually that causes some harm, perhaps. Well, choice B, there's that way of just surrendering to the stillness. And then that choice is just an obvious one, which one to go to. So hopefully that kind of addressed your question in some degree, Leslie.
Yes, it did. And this is going to be an ongoing question for me, and that gave me a lot of material. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Who else would like to share anything? Was there anything surprising that came up in your small groups? Anything that made you see things in a little different way as you shared or connected? Or just what was that experience like to connect with each other?
Tim.
Yes.
One of the things that came up in our group and might have come up in others, I don't know, is that kind of sense of spiritual bypass that maybe we were trying to be more absolute during this election, you know, and kind of try, you know, thinking, okay, you know, it could go either way and that's okay, but it's not really, you know.
Right.
I think that was coming up, you know, kind of big time, but also understanding that when knowing for myself that when I was really upset, it was because I was real, it was me. I was, my sense of self was being, you know, my sense of ethical, whatever, you know, it's me. It's, and so that realization is there, but still, I think we have to be careful not to say, oh, I can deal with this, even when, you know, I think, how do we meet that? Maybe to talk about that a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. I think that sense of spiritual bypassing is such an important thing to kind of keep an eye on. And a lot of it is when we put a level of projection or assumption of how we should be in the moment. You know, I'm a spiritual person, so these are the palette of emotions that I'm allowed, right? And, you know, I'm just going to try to be equanimous with this. And if you're able to recognize that, to really, it's really the I think the best way is just to simply be extremely friendly to whatever your mind throws up or presents itself, I should say. You know, so it's like the mind has its wanting, it has its not wanting. It wants to be the spirit, appear to be the spiritual person, because that's supposed to be less painful than this other way I've been doing. And you just let that be seen. And when you do that, then the spiritual bypassing starts to fall away, because you're seeing, you know, the bias, the adjusting. And it's also the process of being very big, willing to learn. Because, you know, so often we don't realize that we've been spiritually bypassing until we stop doing it and realize, oh, I've been holding myself in this certain stance of who I am and who I think I should be. And we, you know, we hopefully laugh at that and awaken from that. Because it's, we're always on this edge of what's awake, what's present, what's known, and what's covered in the mist, that's covered in the shroud, that's covered in delusions and ignorance. So we're always, as practitioners, we're always working that edge. And as human beings, we're often being, you know, caught more in the delusion side of it. But to feel, to see where that edge is and how it shows up. So a lot of it is just being very patient with yourself and just, you know, keep coming back again and again and being willing to completely be wrong or be a buffoon in your life and your practice and realize, oh wow, I was really caught in that. And by doing that, then suddenly you're holding it much more lightly. If you're not, then you're going into that sense of self. It's like you're, that's the tricky part is as Dharma practitioners, we create this whole kind of subtle sense of self that's trying to make us be the right person. But it's really a person trying to make another person. It's a sense of self trying to make another sense of self. So it's can be very slippery there. Now, it seemed like there's another aspect to your question that I think I lost. Or does that cover it, Cheryl?
I think it's just being present with what is actually happening in the moment. Hmm. Maybe that's where. And you really did answer it. I think that's what it is. I mean, being present with what am I reacting to? Am I really being present with what's going on here? Or do I have an idea about what's going on here that's, you know,
yeah,
that's really bothering me right now?
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think, you know, another element to notice is my relationship to wisdom versus compassion. That sometimes wisdom takes the lead and we'll say, okay, I see what's here. But compassion says, well, this is a hard experience. This is a hard mind state. And I really wish it wasn't here. You know, it's like that sense of acknowledgement, that sense of, wow, you know, I'm really hurting right now. This is painful, what I'm hearing, what I'm experiencing. Because sometimes if we go too much on the wisdom side, we deny the fact that it's painful. And we deny that there's this natural impulse to move away. So that's, I think that's been very helpful for my own practice, is to just acknowledge, well, this is really painful and I wish it wasn't here. You know, and because that's often, if we don't say it out loud or acknowledge it consciously, it stays kind of in the background. We're kind of still fighting with it. But once I say, wow, this is really hard and I don't like it, I wish it wasn't here, then something in me relaxes. Something in me lets go. I'm actually be able to be much more present. And you probably know this with people. Like when someone says that to you and really acknowledges what you're really feeling, there's a way that suddenly it's not such an issue anymore. But when someone denies and, you know, resists and covers up and argues what your experience is, there's that struggle. But when someone says, oh, and really gets you and just says something very simply, that you know they really understand you in that moment, you know, you breathe, take a breath, and you relax. And we do that for ourselves. And so then it doesn't matter what's arises. And say, oh, this arises. I don't like it. I do like it. You know, it's, and it becomes all, you really step into a deeper sense of that absolute. Actually, it starts to open the doorway to the absolute. It's probably a better way to say it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you. You probably have time for one or two more, if there's any out there.
So Tim, I have a question.
Yes.
Listening to what you're saying, and I guess I'd like to get a sense of whether I'm understanding this right, because I think many of us want to be very much engaged in the relative realm.
Yes.
So if I understand what you're saying, even as we hold the relative lightly, even as we realize at some level that there is this absolute, this other realm, that in holding that lightly, in seeing the way things are, we're actually able to much more deeply, steadily, wisely, and more compassionately engage in the relative. That it is, in fact, the way that we engage in that relative realm, less fettered by the reactivity, and perhaps in a way that allows us to sustain our engagement. Am I hearing that right?
Yes. What's the very last word you said? It allows you to sustain, you said?
Yeah, to sustain that engagement.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think that's a very nice summary of it. That when we have when the absolute is really giving us this perspective in the relative world, you know, something that we really, let's say something like climate change that, you know, we're very passionate about. There's many actions. There's many things that we need to do. There's many, you know, things to engage in the world. When the relative step, you know, the absolute steps in and has that as a background perspective, is that's actually where we really resonate. How those balance up is that you can have this, okay, I'm going to really try to act in this way, but I'm also holding that, well, you know, it's not really a sense of me thinking. It's much more of a deep knowing that all things are held equally. That allows the flexibility to meet someone that you're trying to convince and trying to argue a point and say, well, let me really hear what your perspective is. Let me hear what really you're like, as we were talking with Cheryl, what's your deepest wants? What's your deepest desires? Why are you so against stopping climate change? But if we aren't able to go into how that relative, that's a question from the relative, is we can ask a question and really hear out a perspective that's completely opposite of ours. Because we hold the whole sense of me and other very fluidly. And then we can meet and actually hear. And then we can say, okay, well, I really hear that. So let's see if we can meet your needs and also at the same time meet the needs of the planet. You know, but if we're caught in the relative, we can't really hear. We hear in order to convince and to overcome. And you know, we know that when someone tries to sell us something or try to convince us, we can get kind of stubborn around it. We get kind of tight around it. And it gives us that, and also gives us that sense of peace of being able to, this is the sustaining, is that we have this whole other, you know, relationship to the absolute that is deeply satisfying, is deeply fulfilling, that we can rest in, that we can go out into nature or be with our loved ones and really bask in that, the peace that's there from the absolute. And so that really has a buoyancy for our spirits. Buoyancy gives us an energy to meet those difficult things. But when we're just contracted in the difficult, which is contracted in the relative, we lose that buoyancy. We become exhausted.
So that goes too towards perhaps being overwhelmed or despairing at the suffering of others, that there's a certain holding lightly.
Sorry, can you speak just a little bit louder, Ken?
So that also, I assume, goes towards the despair or overwhelm that can come from realization of the suffering of others, that there's a holding it lightly that doesn't mean we think any less of it or we're
That's right.
Yeah, that's respectful, right. an understanding of it, but in a way that doesn't take away our ability to move from wisdom and heart.
That's right. Yeah. The sense of despair, that sense of, it's like the relative perspective can't fully understand the absolute. It's like with the absolute, it's like it's really not a problem. It's like, yeah, it's like the world may collapse and be, you know, just a devastation. And the absolute, it sounds very strange, can hold that. Just kind of can hold a healthy planet in the future. It can hold, it's like the stillness that you can see it much more simply in things which aren't so charged. You know, it's more accessible. But when it's really a deep quality, there's a way that it holds that. And you can see that very personally. Like we can see how, you know, my own mortality can be also held with that same quality. The mortality of myself personally, of my loved ones, you know, of the earth can all be held as this is the natural cycle of life. And you can still act and take care of yourself, and you can take care of the planet. So this is often the paradox with practice, is how the relative and absolute interrelate. And I think it's a key thing to remember is the relative can't comprehend the absolute, while the absolute can hold the relative. And in that holding, we can really be much more effective in the world. Thank you, Ken. When you bowed, your screen share made you vanish. It was kind of wild. It's like, wow. Or your background. Right. So we've come to 9:00, and I'd just like to thank everyone for your engagement. And just for a quick reminder that we do have our drop-in meditations in the mornings, on every morning except Wednesday, so you can look online. I lead one on Tuesday, Tori's on Thursday, and Susan is on Mondays and Fridays, and Seuss has one in the afternoon on Tuesdays. So if that fits into your schedule, I know many of you have come to those. It's nice to sit together and ask any questions you might have. All right, so next week we'll have a talk continuing with the topic of birth and death. All right, have a wonderful evening.